not a handgun control. That's been before us, but the Rifle Association always knocks that down. Would be a good thing for them to express themselves publicly. Again, Chief Justice Berger has made many suggestions about how one can speed up the processes in courts. That in itself impedes justice, and criminals knowing that it's going to lag a long time, it becomes a barrier to realization of.
I think it's an important question. I just think we need to get it phrased in a good way.
All right. You put it just a moment ago. Do you want to state it again?
Well, I think I left out half of it, which is the individual rights thing. But, like, how or what is your policy on reform of the criminal code with respect to individual human rights, either in general or specifically Bill S-1?
Would that meet with your concern?
Yes, I think probably we need to add, some more thought about getting in how it relates to our Bill of Rights. And I think probably we need to get us that at this point.
Yes?
I'm wondering if this talk of rights and so forth relates somehow with the subject of personal privacy and the government's intrusion into all of our personal affairs, both with social security numbering systems and other forms of data gathering.
That's very much connected with this bill.
Well, I think I would have to say I would support government in this numbering system with social security, because you've got to remember this is a very, well, unmanageable thing. Its size is such. And we ought, at least I feel, we ought not to fear unless one is wanting to, if one has something to cover up, it's a little different thing. No, the other man has the...
In reply to that statement, I would then want to know what kind of safeguards would be proposed for any kind of a national numbering system of that nature.
I think that's too hard of an issue to debate. It's not clean enough. You know, it's not left or right. It's kind of, I want it to be safe and nobody's privacy to be infringed, and that doesn't tell us anything.
It seems to me this is an area where if one wants to push on this, one ought to do it with John Gardner's outfit, the Common Cause.
Yes, they have a post-Senate bill number one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about it, but I think you're right.
I don't think this would be the best kind of topic to submit for public debate in a rather limited length of time. What else? Yes.
I'm going back to something you read and I didn't quite understand. It was about the foreign aid. How are we going to control what we give other countries? I couldn't understand. Who's going to take care of giving that food or that money to the people who really need it?
You mean in this resolution that I read that's before Congress now?
Who's going to are the politicians and the government in that country going to control it, or is there going to be a group of people like different countries sending their own agents to control it, or are we going to send our people there to control it?
This, of course, is always a difficult issue. There have been a number of times when politicians in some countries have sold things that have been sent that should be. Yes. Where you've seen it done, yes. And for that reason, there is a general feeling in international circles that if it's done by private agencies, then you know it gets to where it is supposed to be taken care of. The Swedish part. If what?
What do you mean by private agencies?
Church agencies and comparable. in a debate in the Swedish parliament, they said, let the mission society dispose of it. Then we know, and this was a Labour government, then we'll know it'll get there.
Great. I'm going to quote two situations. One refers to my own country. I belong to the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But just last year, a politician got away with a whole van of food stamps. And he was a wealthy man. I mean, this is a true fact. It was a newspaper. And that really hurt me. We're paying the taxes here. And I live in another country in South America where people, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And they're not getting what we send them. And somebody else is getting their pocket.
Should we back up in connection with support of this resolution, say, conditioned on adequate provision for help reaching?
I'm telling you what I have seen. What you do about it, I cannot say.
Thank you for calling attention to that. This will be in on our record. Somebody else over here have? All right. What other?
I don't know the answer to this one, but it'd be interesting to see how far I. Recently, a number of countries have exceeded us in gross national product per capita, yet their per capita energy consumption is considerably less than ours. What are your explanations for this?
Greed.
I think.
The countries that do have big governments, the European countries, at least compared to ours, they have very strong unions too, so I don't know what
they could agree to say, well, this is a problem that rests with the American people. What do you do about it? It isn't a... I doubt that that would be something that could be debated. If we had a separate society, but remember this is now in the area where they're going to try to take action, and I would guess that that's a little bit too much in the abstract.
Don't they ask those kinds of questions?
Yeah.
That seems to me an important kind of question. I admit that it is kind of, you couldn't give a quick answer, but I'd really like to see how a candidate would reply to that, because historically we've always said we're number one and so forth, and now we're about number five, I guess. Anyhow,
would you like that to go into the hopper?
Yeah.
I see a lot of affirmative nods. You'll have a record of it there, will you, Ron?
Okay.
All right, what else? Yes.
This issue may not seem important to some people here, but to people in the eastern part of the country, it's whether the government should expand or curtail Amtrak, which is the government... the subsidized agency operating the passenger trains in this country.
There was earlier a suggestion that this whole question of transportation so on would be reviewed.
Yeah, but I think this section of it should be brought in to make sure that it gets on the agenda. It's fairly important for people in a lot of this country whether they have passenger trains or not. And I think if we leave it out, it won't get mentioned.
I think the way in which it's formulated could include it.
I think it should be included.
What's the feeling of the group? Should that be set aside specifically from the whole question of transportation?
I think it should be included, but possibly more generalized in something like whether not only how we're going to handle transportation, but priorities for development of it, both government and private. Which would include expanding and contracting Amtrak and also government support of freeway systems and whether money from those systems can go to alternate systems. I think like the gas tax, part of it can only go to freeways and can't go to trains or anything else. And that's a policy merit.
All right, we'll move on because I think this is all hangs together under the transportation and this detail that was suggested here by the two last speakers. Yes.
If the resolution on food that you spoke to earlier addressed the question of the usage of food as a political tool.
That really, I think, was the thing that the young lady back here wanted to know about, and we suggested that we perhaps ought to tack something on to this four-part resolution, that it be conditioned on not being used for as a political...
I think there's a couple of issues there. One is the whole matter of the usage or non-usage of it as a political tool of it. I think another related aspect, and again, I'm not sure whether this was included in the reading or not, is the extent to which financial support will be given for research and development in other countries for new food stuffs. And thirdly, the matter of the whole question of food policy per se in this country vis-a-vis our relationship with other countries. And I thought when you read the resolution, a focus more on the matter of feeding people in this country, and I'm not clear, maybe you can clarify.
It covers internationally also, yes. In fact, I was pleased when I read it, because sometimes Congress tends to keep their eyes only on this country. And of course, the moment you would ask them about this resolution, then they would refer to many agencies of the United Nations. What about...
Well, just one other add on that. One of the concerns we've had in our churches has been the whole hunger issue. And obviously, the churches are not going to solve that problem by themselves. And just as historically it's been the role of the church to sensitize the government and other people to the development of agencies and institutions and programs to meet human needs, i.e. hospitals, universities, etc. Today that is in the area of food, and I'd like to see that whole thing incorporated there if it isn't by plan.
That would be a part of this resolution, I would think. And this has the thorough support of Bread for the World, and they are concerned that whole gamut of and of course there are a number of agencies now that are private agencies, not necessarily church agencies, that are concerned about overseas development, and that only one that has its headquarters in Washington D.C. and one in London. But that is an exceedingly important thing. Over here, somebody, yes.
I'd like to know what you're going to, I'd like to have them address themselves to the Social Security program in the United States.
From what angle?
Well, specifically it needs reform, in one breath someone will say that it's going to go down the chute, go broke in X number of years, even though the amount that is being paid in each year is being increased in the relative increase that people who are on Social Security are getting is still relatively small. And there needs to be reforms within the system. One thing that was called to my attention not too long ago, which I found rather appalling, is that if a woman, for instance, has been married to a man for 22 years and has been a mother and a housewife and had no income and has not paid into Social Security, is divorced by her husband and he marries another woman, she is no longer his wife. Therefore, she has no Social Security benefits. That leaves her with nothing. That's not real equitable. Whoever he's married to at the time gets a Social Security benefit. I'm not trying to make it a women's lib question,
no.
But there are many injustices in the Social Security program. And I think they need to address themselves to that program, to whether it is going to go bankrupt and all of us who've been paying into it all these years are going to derive nothing from it.
I feel very much with you on this thing that you mentioned, but I wonder if one is going to ask them to debate it. One almost needs to, through one's own research, to be able to lay on the platter. Now, these things are an inequity. And what will be done in order to make Social Security the servant of all people under all conditions.
Well, what are they going to do to keep Social Security from going broke? That would be, that in itself would be a debatable issue.
Well, a man like Humphrey, who might have been the candidate under some conditions, said under no conditions would Congress ever allow it to go broke. They'd take it out of the general treasury. And I suspect because you've got more voters among some of the senior citizens today, so that, and it would be a matter of going to the general treasury on that.
You think maybe a question concerning, just trying to think if we could point to something specific on that, the Social Security tax is a regressive tax, whereas the income tax is progressive. Could there be some question, you know, that might focus on that issue? You know, one tax that you're actually, as you get wealthier, your percentage drops in Social Security, whereas we, in the income tax, of course, the percentage supposedly goes up, actually with loopholes it levels off. But do you think that it would be good to have raised some question in that regard to that? I'm just asking advice, I don't have any.
What does the group think?
I think that's like beyond Social Security reform, and they're kind of fiddling around with the fine-tuning now. They aren't even looking at that, as far as I can see. I'm not saying they shouldn't.
Okay.
Nobody else calls before. I'm going to read a few things that I've jotted here to see whether or not you think they ought to be included. And if you don't, we'll just pass them by. What policy will you follow to restore health to our decaying cities? There's been a great quarrel on, you know, with the federal bureaucracy has been represented as inefficient and muscle-bound because of its size and much overlapping of agencies. Do you have a four-year program for this problem? The reason I ask that, because they both have really admitted that we've got a huge. And Carter says we can cut it down and yet get more services than we're getting. but that's not being specific. That's a general.
I would just the question of overlapping, though. I would that kind of says that that's the reason. There are some people saying that it's because it's large organizations which are hierarchical and there aren't checks and balances that overlaps have, and so then they develop this whole internal structuring.
Because of size and much overlapping.
Yeah, but I'm not sure whether that's the reason.
Maybe just
in other words, if we could phrase the question to say, what do you think about it, without implying that the overlapping itself is the cause of the inefficiency? Because there are some people that are arguing that that's not the case. I'm not sure.
Yes, but some of those are often people who want to maintain the jobs that might be eliminated
I'd like to phrase it so that we don't tell them, set them up and say that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know.
The federal bureaucracy has been represented as inefficient and muscle bound. Do you have a 4-year program for this problem? And leave out the overlapping of agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they both acknowledge that this is there, and this would ask them to give their
attention. That would be better, because we may find that we do need big government to solve some of the problems. We may, you know, we need better government. And how would you get it? I think that's the question, rather than trying to just, you know, set it up. I like it better the second way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what we'll do. No, here's an old problem, but I believe that if we don't someday face up to it, the only way we can get rid of the heavy indebtedness is by bankruptcy. No citizen or corporation could operate on continuous deficits as the government does. Is it impossible for government to convert promises of a balanced budget into reality? What might be a realistic timetable? The only reason that Germany is on a strong economic basis, although she lost the war, is because they wiped out all indebtedness, practically. and they had to take it. They didn't do it voluntarily. 90%, if you had 100 marks in the bank, 90% were wiped out completely. And you had control over 5% or 5 marks, and 5 marks were frozen. This squeezed all the water out, and they were ready then to move forward. It might even be a healthy thing someday. Well, we'd be forced to it someday to wipe out all indebtedness and start over again. And it seems to me, unless we give serious attention, and they work out a graduated scale on this, and if we ask them to say something about a timetable, then it seems to me they have to put their mind to it, to how can this be done? Because $76 billion is a deficit this year, and I think it'll be held to $50 billion next year. Well, you can't just because we're big, there are some economists who say you just can go on and on. Well, there'll come a day when it'll all be washed out in some way. And whoever is living at that time are the ones who will suffer. Do you think that, or is this too old a question to throw before them again?
That's one of the most pressing issues I think we have nationally. I think that's got to be. Whether we ask that question or not, I think it's going to be debated.
It has to be debated.
I think the older it gets, the more pressing it gets.
That's right.
Could you phrase it? Is there some way you could phrase it in a way that we won't just get the pat answer? Because I can almost hear the answer that would be given to that, particularly if they only had a few minutes to respond.
Well, it seems to me, what might be a realistic timetable? That they've got to sharpen their pencil in before answering that.
Maybe program and timetable. What would be a realistic program and timetable?
Yes, that would strengthen it. What might be a realistic program and timetable? You want to throw that in? Okay. Maybe this one isn't important. The spoils system seems to remain with us in the appointment of ambassadors to some foreign posts. Do you have any intentions of filling all such posts with career people? If not, why not? I've had occasion to see some American ambassadors that, in my judgment, didn't know much about what time of day it was in the particular area in which they were serving. It was obvious they had a business background, but not much other. And we've had some smart men in this field, but they have been career people who've been trained for it.
Could we say replace rather than career men, but by people who have a knowledge of the culture and the language?
Yeah,
qualified. So there may be somebody who isn't,
who's a career man who might not even have it about that country.
Yeah, or vice versa, you may have someone who knows quite a bit about the country but isn't a career man in the State Department, for example. That might,
But one sees so little of appointment of such.
But could we phrase it more of the idea of why we want that, like a knowledge of the language and the culture maybe would be a...
He has to have more than the knowledge of the language and the culture. He has to have some sense of what how diplomatic processes go on.
Yeah.
Could I talk
about that a little bit? We lived in Brazil 9 years, and one of the reasons they move consular people a lot is because if they get to know the country and the language too much, they get too attached to the local people, and then they don't feel more on our side. This is the answer. That's the answer I got to that question. It bothered me to see how fast they move them. That if they are too attached to the country, and they are emotionally involved with the country, and even if they learn the language, it's fine. They should communicate. But if they know the country too much, then they're going to kind of change over their side and not over our side.
Of course, that's the old story about why they change them around, and there is something in it. On the other hand, a friend of mine who was highly placed in the Ethiopian government and represented his government whenever the All-Africa conferences were held. He being friendly to the states and I being an American, he said to me, "It hurts me to see how representatives of Russia will know the language of the country that they are serving in and will be able to move in and out and speak readily with those who are there, the Africans." While he said, "You're American ambassadors, they don't know anything else but the English language and are ineffective because they cannot communicate." And this man, very knowledgeable, he's been representative of his government in Rome, in London, and was head of a big department in the Ethiopian government.
But one thing you ought to account to when you move to a country, you learn the language first.
Yes.
I mean, that's a courtesy,
yes,
above all. And no matter what you're doing, what company you go for, you should learn the language so you can communicate with them. And
but not all American investors have done that.
Don't say American.
No.
There were a lot of foreigners in Brazil that never bothered to learn the language.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sad because that hurt the Brazilians a lot and got a lot of sadness. Where if they learn the language, they can protect our country better,
yes,
by communicating in their own language.
And of course, that's what the word career people presupposes. That's why I use that, because that term means more than what...
it means more to you, but will it mean more to...
In the State Department, it
or
means...
in the State Department, but to,
yeah,
the people listening to the television. Would it be better, you know, to say, I don't know, responsible people who have a knowledge of the language and the culture, rather than saying career people? With the present attitude of you know, big government, they're going to say, "Oh boy, career people, that's going to be..." Which isn't true, but I mean, that may be how they respond when they get away with it.
Are you in favor of tenure in the university where you are teaching?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
But you know, there are a lot of them that are pulling for that if they don't have it, and they have great battles about it. And
all I'm saying, and I agree, I hear what you're saying, and I think it's good after you explain it to me.
But it didn't say enough.
But when you get on TV, if we had you prefacing the question and explaining what the career people really do, then
well,
I would like suggestions, but we won't have you there.
I would not expect, I would not expect that these two candidates will take the verbiage that we transmit, as long as they understand what we're driving at, then they'll have to deal with it in their own way.
Why don't you say trained, qualified people, and just, you know, not say whether it's career people or whatever, but...
Okay.
But
all right, we'll shift it to trained, qualified people.
Qualified
trained
people.
And qualified would mean, certainly qualified with language would be the first qualification. It would
But I'll bet you if you went to every past president, they said all the people, with all the ambassadors I've appointed have been qualified, even the ones that can't speak the language.
That's the thing that I had in mind when I used the term career, because that nails them down to getting someone who's gone to school and who has specialized and is an expert in political science, and also would have to know.
How about qualified people who know the language and the culture?
Why don't you just say, "Stop giving meetings diplomatic post-political plums"? That's what you're saying. Because all this fancy language is going to, as you say, they're going to say what they are. You know, they've been
businessmen,
they've been, you know, they've been...
But if you say speak the language, and for, let's say, or say the candidates say yes on this, and then they keep appointing the people that they've appointed in the past, you can tell very quickly whether they can speak the language.
It appears that you do not favor using the reference career people, but that we get a little more phraseology in there to explain that it's someone who is qualified as far as language, culture, political background.
Diplomatic procedures.
Yes.
Would you say professional?
Yes.
If you say qualified people, you say amateur. Anyone could be sent to the court of St. James and they could speak English.
We can incorporate that thought of professional, because that would include what you're asking for, Dave. It would not. It would include what I have in mind by career people.
I prefer qualified.
Yes.
because professional to some people has a...
What's worse than career?
One can have both. Qualified professional people, because I've known professional people that might not sometimes be qualified.
I like the idea of a knowledge of the language and the culture, and we can have something else before that, because it seems to me that's a test, and that's going to eliminate a lot of the people that... the incompetence that you see, and like you say, they're going to have to go to career people.
I think it's good, like Dave says, to have something in it that's concrete, that when we pick up the newspaper and we see who they appointed ambassador to China,
that's
we
right.
can tell, did he or did he not follow up on what he said.
That's right.
Well, the first ambassador that Canada appointed to Japan was a man, a retired missionary, who knew the former prime minister of China that died here a little while ago. He could sit and visit with him like old friends, because he spoke Chinese with the fluency of someone, and that's the kind of people you want to look for.
Right.
What is your position with regard to ocean mining as over against the resolutions of the Law of the Seas Conference? Now, that Law of the Seas Conference probably won't be over until September 17th, so we don't know what the finished resolutions will be, but it appears as though that the nations that are a part of the United Nations will be voting in favor of that all mineral rights will have to be shared with everyone alike. That is, whatever is gained in the way of money will have to be shared with all alike.
If that's the way it's going to come up, then that's a good question. Because I can't see a lot of the American companies that do that would get involved in that wanting to split up their profits and stuff.
Well, as of right now, Americans are about the only ones that have the know-how, even above Russia, to actually carry out this job. But the Americans perhaps would like to see that there be an international authority set up, and that private companies could be contracted with to carry it out. Well, they would have to say enough about it to indicate where it stands on the basis of this conference that will be concluded in another 2 weeks. But this is going to be a big issue in the future, just down the road a little ways.
It sounds like the Middle East oil situation all over again under the ocean in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of having private companies contracted.
Well, I think it would be useful to ask them, because so often the first we hear anything about is when Kissinger threatens somebody, you know, that we're going to do such and such. And the public has never even heard that we had a policy.
Yeah.
You know, like we're going to have a 200-mile limit or whatever. We're going to change the limit.
We have already declared on that.
Right.
But it seems because a number of nations have done that, that would get a pretty good chance of being approved. Although many of the smaller nations that don't have any sea coasts who do fishing within 200 miles of our coast are not too keen about that. It's difficult to know how that will come out yet. But it ought to be discussed with the citizenry through these debates, or if not, if it can't become a part of this, it should be discussed in the future so that we know what we will be voting for. Can U.S. policy on apartheid be stated clearly enough for all of Africa to know that we are against it?
Ah, good. I like that one.
Shall we let that go in?
No.
Does the United Nations figure heavily in your thinking about international problems? Are there some issues that would automatically be channeled through the United Nations? Some not? Explain what your policy would be. We strongly supported the League of Nations. We really brought it into being as a result of Woodrow Wilson's 14 points. And then when the League of Nations was kaput after World War II, we drove hard for a United Nations. But as of right now, I would say the average American wouldn't be able to stand up to a quiz on the United Nations and what we do through it, as well as some people of Asia and Africa. And I don't think we have given it the big play that it seems that we should, on the basis of the hopes that we posited in it.
It seems to me that you know, from what I've heard, you know, in recent times, that, you know, the hopes of the American people in the United Nations have kind of gone, you know, down, you know, the tube, you know, with regards to, I don't know, the deal in the Far East and you know, OPEC and all that stuff. It seems like, you know, there's been a lot of talk that, you know, really, you know, that's been about it. I don't know, like, I really don't have that much confidence in the United Nations.
Are you saying in a quiet way that OPEC was a dastardly thing, the thing they did?
Well, can you say it?
Well, then, if the automobile workers go on a strike now in a couple more months, maybe, before the new contracts are formed, are they doing anything different than OPEC did?
Well, that's, you know, it just seems like, you know, in dealing with, like, okay, in dealing with unions, like, there's always recourse, you know, above, you know, like, there's always, like, you know, government agencies, you know, if things get bad with OPEC, it's just kind of, it's OPEC. OPEC kind of, you know, there's no recourse above OPEC, really.
Of course, that's, you shouldn't mix the United Nations in with that. The United Nations didn't have anything to do with OPEC. This was...
But where else can you go, though?
Oh, you mean if you're going to... you're saying that if there is to be any redress in any area,
yeah,
you've got to have... I misunderstood you. Yes.
It seems to me, too, that you could make that more specific if you could get agreement here. For instance, do you have any plans to push the ratification of the UN human rights, what do you call it, not charter, but the whole bit we have...
The charter only, has been.
We have only, not the charter, the Human Rights Convention is what I'm trying
to
say.
Mm-hmm.
We have only ratified, you know, one or two of those, and some of them are just, it would at least be a gesture in support, is what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying. And the other thing I would say, you know, particularly to Carter, because we don't know, what is your position on the New World Economic Order?
Mm-hmm.
And... as presented, you know, at the last session of the UN. Kissinger has more or less given his reply and
not entirely negative.
We don't have any idea what Carter thinks about the new economic order.
Again, I'd like to phrase that question in some way that would allow them, would force them to say something. I think that question, they can give a fuzzy answer on it.
Do you want to make a suggestion?
They couldn't if they really took up the points of the, you know, leaving on the border, because they...
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to be answering the question for political reasons. I mean, you know, pretty much, I mean, that's their position right now.
Would you want this, but with the proviso that it's phrased in such a way that it's clear that we would like a reaction to the UN's new economic order proposals?
This has occurred to me something that happened way back in the beginning when we were talking about the possibility of getting a private response back from them. I guess I think that I'd like to put in whatever the initial memo is, that if these things aren't debatable on TV, that we would like a private response, just for whatever, you know, whatever communities we all go back out to, that kind of thing.
You'd like a private response just to what we send in?
Yeah, like if you can't debate all these things on TV, which given the number of questions we're coming up with, I doubt we're going to hear them all on TV, even if they only debate at Holden Village.
I think we thereby contribute to the gigantic shape that government is,
yeah,
to handle it that way. I would sooner take... I have been a member of Common Cause since it was organized, and I would sooner process those through an independent citizens' agency that is supported by citizens, and then have them press, and they lobby on a professional basis on some of these things. And they report as to just what kind of response they get. They'll even report the names of congressmen who refuse to do this and others do that.
Yeah, that would be just as good, but the idea that it comes back some way, it doesn't...
Yes, but that each one would have to take up themselves if it were to be routed that way. I don't know whether this ought to go in or not, but what's your reaction? Reports from South Korea and Taiwan indicate that these two nations are as subversive of human rights as authoritarian communist regimes. What will your policy be with reference to South Korea and Taiwan? Or would that be opening a bag of worms?
How about Chile and the Philippines? I mean, you could make a little bit longer list, and I'd say yes, send it in.
Very long. Right. The other hand, you could fill pages.
We're going to lose a lot of our allies.
They would never get that.
The only thing is that these two we are supporting so heavily.
Yeah.
And
I know. Yes. Yeah, but okay, I see what you mean. We're so strongly involved, actually, in maintaining the government.
Yes, that's right. Let's see.
I've noticed one question, one whole area that we haven't had any questions on at all, and that's education. And I don't have any specific question in mind because I didn't think of it either before I got here, but I'd say enough people have enough questions about education in this country that we have to
I would
come
think
up with
then
something.
One would have to have something specific as
right.
to what you...
I guess I'm tossing out to see if anybody was thinking about that.
This one I throw in only for the reason that Reagan got a lot of mileage out of it while he was campaigning. And that's the Panama Canal
yes.
business. Our country supported President Eisenhower when he backed Egypt's takeover of the Suez Canal. Do you support a policy that would look toward a relinquishment of the Panama Canal to the Republic of Panama? Of course, the negotiations are looking toward that. It may be a way down the road, but they're declaring it.
I like it. I like the preface to it, pointing out the direct parallel.
It is a pretty direct parallel, yes. Well, there are a couple more here, but I don't want to throw them at the hopper now. Do you feel that these that have been mentioned with the some amendments such as has been proposed in the discussion?
I have one suggestion just to throw out. Do you think that our world status would be improved?
You're doing well to be able to read up there.
I know. Do you think that our world status would be improved if we stopped claiming to be number one and instead sought the help of other countries to solve some of our pressing problems such as the decline of cities?
That would be an excellent subject for an address at the proper place, but I don't think that would be an issue for debate.
Okay.
We could ask each other to write a paper.
They could never politically say that they wouldn't say their country was number one.
That's probably
true.
You know, we
gotta
like
watch out because
we
don't have all questions that are going to hurt the group. Somebody who only answers them honestly. That's the other thing. You know, I mean, you may get a question that's deep and penetrating, and one candidate asks it honestly, and the other...
Wouldn't that be refreshing?
And gives you a bunch of baloney, but then the one that gets more votes.
Well, it was suggested earlier this evening that we should ask them to try to concentrate on an area, and if they gave attention to these questions, they'd have to then divide them up into given areas so that there would be depth discussion. This one, they might walk around it.
I think there's another question on the multinationals, the corporations and stuff that are beyond the rules, the regulations, the laws of nations and become laws unto themselves.
Nice.
I'd like to know how these could be handled.
Well, you would have some that would indicate there are a lot of things that are getting done in the world today that wouldn't get done if we didn't have the multinational corporations. So it perhaps is not that they are multinational, but that they may sometimes take advantage over against weak governments, and that there has been a great deal of.
I'd like to just propose a question. I don't really know if this would really, you know, go in with what we're discussing now, but we really haven't discussed, you know, directly détente too much, you know, and things related. And I have a couple different, you know, ideas here. One thing that just kind of upset me in the last, you know, month or so was dealing with the SALT talks, and there's supposedly a test somewhere that exceeded the limitations put on by the last SALT agreement by the Russians. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, what can be done, or you know, what revisions can be made, or you know, it seems like, you know, we make them and they break them, and we make them and something else happens, and even in that, I think it was done, you know, in secretness, and you know, because of that, you know, I don't really know if there can be much said, but you know, that I don't really know, you know, how it can be. Be debated. Well, you know, maybe somebody can help me out.
You don't have to know. You ask the question, let them tell you how.
another thing that kind of concerns me is that I've heard, I don't know, through the grapevine, I suppose, not really from any, you know, press or anything like that, that the Soviet Navy, as far as equipment, has really, you know, has the upper hand on us. And, you know, naval strength, you know, probably isn't, you know, what it used to be, you know, as far as you know, real protection, you know, in times of real war, you know, with, you know, all ICBMs and all that stuff. But I think, you know, if we do want to maintain our world stature and, you know, really our number one attitude, I think maybe that should be something that should be really considered too, you know, as far as, you know, keeping things even. I don't know, you know, if that would be dealing with any types of limitation talks as far as armament or that type of thing, but I think it should be something that should really be considered.
Most of the reports that I've seen by men who are supposed to know the military equations would indicate that we are not number two, as some would infer, but that Russia has moved ahead. There was a great gap between her naval strength and ours, but now this is a little bit closer to one another. Are you then proposing that we ask government to think of that when we are also asking them to think about balancing the budget? Yes.
Fairly straightforward proposal. I'd like to know whether either of the candidates feel that the American public should be continued to be informed of other nuclear testing around the world, as has just been discontinued. That information is now no longer available to us readily.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought I had a pen here.
Latest Russian test
business. Now here we are. Do you think that ought to be something going? I wonder whether that...
It's sort of minute. But
yes, it wouldn't be a thing for debate. It seems to me that's rather...
It's kind of straightforward, yes or no.
Yes, yeah.
Both candidates have already expressed themselves as far as their defense posture, and it's fairly... It seems to be quite strong. Carter came on stronger than, you know, almost as strong, certainly, as Ford on it. They don't seem to have any quibble quabble about it. In that sense, they seem to be determined to maintain it. In other words, I think your concern is probably they've already answered it. In other words,
I thought,
unless they change.
In listening to the, you know, acceptance speech by Carter, I didn't get the one by Ford, but I thought, you know, kind of the way I understood it was, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, as concerned, you know, with moving ahead in defense as we should be, you know, with taking care of, you know, our humanitarian needs at home.
Well, he did say, actually, that he strongly favored a strong defense, you know, an adequate defense. That's what I'm saying. Now, maybe it's a matter of degree in your mind as to whether he favors enough or not. But he did say that.
That should come out.
I think probably that they are pretty much the same there. It's time, I guess, to call it quits for tonight.
I've got to ask if there has been ever have a foreign policy this last year.
Yeah, oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff
then. Oh, yes. Of course, each administration that goes in new says something about that they're going to do something there.
Yes, they
and they don't do too much. Have. No, and part of it is so many oligarchies that are heading up those nations.
Thank you for the discussion. I think that's a very healthy thing to do.
I appreciate.
Well, I was glad that they spent some time on it.
Mm-hmm. The ambassador should not be a political investorship. Should not be a political firm.
The what? Oh, and that, no, I don't think so either. Even though a very good friend of mine got that as a political firm for having campaigned for one president.
I was wondering if you know, when you're talking about the ambassadorships and stuff, you used a term that I wasn't familiar with, and I was just wondering if maybe you could, you know, give me a little explanation. I'm, you know, trying to pick up
which term.
It was.
You mean career people?
No, it was instead of doing it in with this system.
Oh, spoil system.
Yeah.
Well, the spoil system is that word is used to. For example, postmasters were always appointed out of the... With each new president, there'd be new postmasters, mm-hmm. and they'd be appointed because they had supported the president. And so he got something out of them. They called it the spoil system.
Isn't that related to the spoils of war, the winner takes all?
A little bit. That is, the phrase came from there, yes. But not... it was never as bad as that. But, well...
Kind of
it was in this sense that the new president, if he was a Republican, then he has the right. If he's a Democrat, then he has the right. I remember in the congregation I served, the one member of the congregation had been postmaster. And then when FDR, he had been appointed during Hoover's administration, when FDR came in, he lost his wife or his job right away, and then in the Depression it was difficult to get a new job, so he felt it real heavily then. And this same system has been carried on with regard to some ambassadorships. I was about to say only the smaller ones, but that's not true. Anne Armstrong is in London now, and she was no doubt selected because she's a strong Republican woman, and also because she's a woman, because they wanted to get more women into places. Sometimes they will appoint people who are pretty well qualified, and then it's all right, but it seems to me it'd be far better if people would have to be appointed out of a pool of those who were well qualified, and obviously to all people.
It seems funny, though, that, you know, with the Republic, okay, like, you know, like we have a Republican president and Democratic Congress now, and it seems funny that, you know, the Democratic Congress would go ahead and approve the appointments of somebody that they knew was really a strong Republican, you know, choice.
Well, this is, first of all, as it is now, it's the president who appoints them.
Don't that be approved by
Congress? Yes, they have to be approved by Congress, but... If they don't approve one because he is of that party, because the Democrats know that if a Democratic president comes in, then they will do the same. Oh, and I would like to see the whole, see the whole system change.
Now, I remember while I was back, it was the Secretary of Defense, that they were really, you know, there was a lot of dissent. I forget who it is, that Schlesinger?
Schlesinger, yes.
Wasn't he just appointed last fall?
Well, he hadn't been in very long. About a year.
It was one of the secretaries anyway, and they were really, you know, I was really glad to see, you know, that there was, you know, dissent, and, you know, because, you know, so many times you just hear that it's just kind of, you know, the back-scratching process, and, you know, it was kind of refreshing to see.
Schlesinger probably was... Well, he wasn't exactly fired, but he resigned, and I think he resigned because he didn't get support. he was a man who really wanted to assert the powers of the citizenry over against the military. And Eisenhower, you know, when he went out of office, he warned us, look out for the power of the munitions makers. He didn't make it quite that bold, but that's what it meant very clearly. But we have seemingly forgotten that. And he, a military man, so he was probably better posted on that issue than anyone other.
I mean, you're talking about strength of the military. I didn't really follow it.
Oh, he warned the nation of the power of the corporations who are in the business of making profit out of war.
Oh, I see.